Hey, welcome everyone. Let's have an AA meeting. My name's Tim, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. I've been watching this guy, Nick W., for about a year and a half now, and I am convinced he's one of us. Thus, the invitation. But Nick has been telling his story all over North Georgia. Recently spoke at the Coming Group. Very, very active in his home group, at the Gainesville Classic Group, which is my second home group. I'm real proud. I'm glad he came down. He brought a carload of guys with him. Everybody give him a big hand, will you? Thank you.
How y'all doing? I'm an alcoholic. My name's Nick Wilbanks. First time I told my story, a couple months ago, guy that asked me over to tell it, you know, he said, we're going to have you come tell your story, and he said, people are looking forward to it. I remember I asked him, I said, well, what the hell did you tell these people about me? And it's the exact words. He goes, oh, don't you worry about it. I'll make amends for that later. You just go on over and tell your story. So I did, and he didn't show up, so go figure. He never made amends for it either. I heard, you know, when I tell my story to say what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, but I have a guy I look up to a lot, and he says, it's not that, it's what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now, because, you know, it hasn't changed. It's the exact same out there. Anybody that's come in here before and went back out will realize that it don't change out there. It gets worse. We're what changes, hopefully, through the steps. Like I said, my home group's Gainesville Classic Group. I hadn't thought about it before until I heard a guy say it a few weeks ago, and it's perfect. It's right between a bar and a tattoo parlor. And right there with that's a massage parlor, too, so it's right where an AA meeting should be. You know, if you decide you don't want to be there, you can walk out and go next door, and if you decide you don't want to be next door, you can come back in. Haven't seen that firsthand, but I'm sure it's happened many times. You know, I've learned over the last year and a half at Alcoholics Anonymous that, you know, there's so many things that I've learned here about myself, about friends, about what friends should be, about what alcohol and drugs can do to you. And, you know, many things that you learn, but I think the most important thing that I've had to learn is that, you know, my sobriety date and my honesty date are not the same. We're still working on the honesty date a lot. And that's, it's probably not the case with everybody, but that's what it takes for me. And every day is a battle to work on that. Some days I win, some days I lose, but I don't drink over it, and that's what's important. Growing up, you know, was pretty normal. I grew up with a father who's, you know, one thing I will tell you, I'm Southern, I'm Baptist, and I don't get along real well with people from California. And that's going to play into my story later on, you'll hear, but, you know, my father's a Baptist minister. He was pretty normal. He was a football coach growing up. He was my coach. He, you know, see him as a minister now, I'll tell him, you know, and try not to tell his congregation, but this is the same guy I saw kicking pylons up in stands, you know, cussing out referees, and then you see him in church on Sunday and telling people not to do that. Probably has nothing to do with the way I turned out the way I was, but I think about that, you know, we can all live two different lives, whether good or bad. That's just what we do. So I played football for him, had a pretty normal childhood, you know, brother and sisters. Everybody grew up well, no alcohol or any problems in the family. So where mine come from is anybody's guess. I guess I was just born with it in the family. But I had to be different. You know, everybody in my family's smart. You know, they're college degrees, masters, smart, all that good stuff. And then there was me. And I've noticed when, you know, my mom and them used to introduce me, they say, this is, you know, Jill. She's, you know, a finance person with a master's. And this is Chase, and he's got a master's in education. And here's Nick. And I'm like, thanks. So what did Nick do? Nick had to be different. I decided I was going to join the military. And the way I went about it and where my honesty come into play right off the bat is I convinced my parents, I was underage, I was 17, they were signing a reserve contract so Nick would still go to college like the family had planned. And the day before I was to ship out for boot camp, I remember I told them, I said, I need y'all to take me down to MEPS in the morning, going to boot camp. She's like, yeah. She goes, but you'll be home in, you know, 13 weeks, and you're home and you can go to college. And I'm like, oh, about that. I was like, I forgot to tell you, you signed an active duty contract. I'll be gone. Pretty much from that point on, my parents didn't trust me anymore. That was just the beginning of how everything went for me. So I went, did the thing, went to boot camp, did all that. And I think this was destined to be, you know, I got stationed in Hawaii out there at Kaneohe Bay, which turned out to be pretty good because right beside the base, there was the Dole pineapple fields. I bet many of y'all ain't had pineapple liquor, have you? It's very, very good. You know, and I was underage, so you had to come up with clever ways to drink underage in the military. So there was older guys in the barracks that were always drinking, and I learned they're not going to give you any unless you aggravate the hell out of them. Needless to say, I become very aggravative. They would give me some to shut me up and get rid of me, and that's what I did. And we would always sneak out to these Dole pineapple fields and steal the pineapple, bring it back, we'd mix it, make all kind of good stuff. And I think one thing that describes an alcoholic as good as anything I know is one night we were over there drinking, and they had a little bobcat-like thing that they used to clear the fields, and we decided to steal the bobcat and ran it in and crashed it into the side of one of the, I guess, the workers' pickup trucks. Took off running, ran back to base, jumped the wall. The next morning, my idiot drunk self walked straight over there. The MPs are standing there, and I walked right up to him and I said, somebody effed up last night, didn't they? And it was me. I didn't remember doing it. I got told about this, and that to me says as much about alcoholism as I know. Blackout. We don't remember sometimes. And that was the way the military went for a while. And I stayed there and done that. I wasn't a great Marine. I was pretty good, I think. I mean, I held my own. I was drinking a lot. Of course I was drinking. That's what we do. I mean, that's what I do. That's what an alcoholic does. But something changed one day. We were on a deployment to Okinawa. Time zones are a good bit different. We were sound asleep. Most all of us have been drinking all night, and this was, you know, about 1 in the morning, and something happened in the country. We didn't have a clue what it was. Some of y'all remember it, some of you won't. Some towers fell, and everything changed all of a sudden. Life was not the same. No longer could I be the drunk guy. It was time to grow up. I didn't know how. I did not know how to grow up. All I wanted to do was drink, and I remember for the first time I was truly terrified because what am I going to do? I've actually got to do what I signed up to do, and I was scared, and I was afraid, and I was afraid to admit that to my guys. Nobody wanted to be. Some of them probably felt the same way, but to me that was all that mattered. That's how I felt. So we deployed over, and there was a little bit of drinking stuff going on. I mean, see it on news reports and things like that. And it wasn't as bad as some say, and it was worse than others say. But over in there in Afghanistan, there's a plant that grows. Some of y'all might know it. So me being the guy I am, we decided we're going to bring some of the seeds back with us. Now, I did FFA in high school. I was a horticulturist. I put those talents to good use when I got back. And I got out of the Marine Corps, and you know, it just kind of grew natural where I was at. You know, it's just what I was going to do. It's not that I didn't know better, it's that I didn't care. I figured that's what was owed to me. You know, so I mess around with that kind of stuff. You know, I'm working. I'm drinking every day, obviously. And I got a government contract position working for a contractor. It wasn't no glamorous thing, but they paid good money. And what happened was, and this is where, to me, the character defect showed up, one of them. And one of them was big shotism. And it showed up big damn time. You know, I always had a little bit of money, but I never had excess money. And all of a sudden, I had excess money, and that's not good for an alcoholic like I was. you know, no longer am I drinking just Budweiser and those things. You know, now I moved on to the good stuff. I'm buying Jack Daniels and drinking that. That stuff's rough, most of you know. And I just, I couldn't control it no more. You know, I was doing everything I could think of to ruin my life. But I didn't see it. Everybody else saw it. You know, I mean, I would wake up in place that ain't where I was at. I was going to work. I was paying my bills. But other people were noticing it, and I didn't notice. I thought I had them confused. That's that double life we live that, you know, says we play the actor. We think we know what we're doing, and we don't. Everybody else seems to know, but I thought I had everybody convinced that I was not doing anything wrong. And they bought it for a while. And, you know, that's the thing. You come in here and hear it all the time, and I'll bring this up. It's one of the things that I hear a lot. You know, you hear people say, I'm an alcoholic and a. You know, well, folks, if we got into all my andas, we don't have enough time to talk about those. You know, I was an alcoholic first. You know, I hear a lot of times, you know, my favorite alcohol substitute. There ain't no substitute for Jack Daniels, so let's get that crap straight right now. I mean, there's enhancers, there's supplements, but there's no substitute, so don't even try to tell me there is. And you come into these rooms, and I hear it all the time, and we talk about, you know, this and that, and there's purists. Of course there's purists. I don't mean to offend anybody, you know, with this being part of my story. I'll keep it as limited as possible. But it was just what, you know, whatever would get me there, you know, there, that point, that's all I needed. If it was a woman, if it was alcohol, if it was overdoses of Tylenol PM, I didn't care. Whatever would get me to where I didn't care no more, that's what I was going to freaking do. And I was doing it every single day. And I met a woman. I don't know how I met this woman. I don't remember how I met her. I remember she was on the back of my motorcycle. And the funny thing is, if you would have asked me, you hear a lot of times in these meetings, have you made an insightful discovery as to what your living problem is? If you would have asked me at that moment what my living problem was, I would have said I'm predisposed to getting involved with neurotic women. That was my problem. And the reason I know this is because I was drunk and I was driving this motorcycle the wrong way up Georgia 400. I was on the southbound side coming up Georgia 400. And she's screaming. And how I knew she was neurotic is because when I got this thing turned around going the right damn way, she continued to scream. I didn't see the problem. We were going the right way then. I remember we got parked and I told her, I looked at her and I said, you know, you are unfreaking stable. There is something wrong with you. You need medication. And besides that, I told her I'd seen you drink tonight. And you probably are an alcoholic and what you should do is go to AA. I said I would go with you, but it don't work for me. And that brings me back to my first ever AA meeting I went to. It was in Honolulu, Hawaii. It was in September of 97. And I was there. I just spent the last 2 days in the Marine Corps brig for drinking underage. They locked me up in there. Totally not my fault. You know, I was victimized by the damn MPs. Beyond my control. They were just, you know, they were fascist a lot of times. And I walk into this meeting, and everybody looked good. Everybody looked good. Bunch of, you know, probably doctors and lawyers or something on vacation. And if you would have, you know, if you'd have been in there and you'd asked somebody, pick out the alcoholic in the room, you wouldn't have picked nobody out. Because everybody looked, well, you'd have picked me out. I look bad. You would have picked me out. But there was this guy there. He sat next to me. He's from California. That's where this all gets started. And he was, I don't know, 5 months sober, but he wanted to help me. That's what he told me. He said, I'm going to help you, son. You know, I was like, no, I'm from Georgia. I don't want no help from you. But he wasn't having any of it. He was going to help my ass. I said, okay. So he sat there and he repeats off and, you know, all the AA cliches and all that stuff. And if you're new here and you haven't heard them, they're really terrible. So you'll get used to them, though. They grow on you. I remember he asked me, he said, you know, do you think you're an alcoholic? I said, well, how do I know? And he asked me, he said, well, you know, is alcohol causing you problems? I said, no, not really. He says, alcohol causing you problems with women? I said, not since the last one left me. No, not really. I didn't get it. And, you know, I remember there was this guy got up there and he was, you know, said 6 months, 7 months earlier, he had got drunk, got a couple of DUIs. Then he come in here and found people in AA and everything was good. I looked over at that guy from California. I said, well, where do you send the difficult people to? Because this is, don't sound bad enough for me. And he told me, shut up. Equally as appropriate, I guess. So I shut up. And I sat there and listened to that AA meeting. It was a birthday meeting. Afterwards, they gave out their birthdays and stuff like that. And if there was one thing I knew in that AA meeting, I was different. This was not going to work for me. You people are crazy. You're insensitive. You're not very bright. You lack intelligence. So it's not the place for me to go. So when I told that, you know, so I told that girl, I said, you know, AA won't work for me, but you should go because you're definitely an alcoholic. Funny thing is, I ended up marrying that girl. I thought she said, let's go home and have fun. She apparently said, let's go home and make a baby. We went home, made a baby, and got married. I don't get that, but I guess that shows what an alcoholic will do, and that's what I did. So life continued on. We stayed married. Stayed married a lot longer than I planned to, but we separated pretty quickly. And I remember I got a call. She had moved down to Valdosta, Georgia, and told me the baby was being born. I hadn't heard from her in 3 months. So I drive down there to Valdosta, drunk, of course. And I walk in there, and I remember she had had the baby, and I'd missed it. But when I walked in, she was happy to see me. I didn't understand that. I mean, I was sorry. I was a piece of crap. And I remember her and that baby, they didn't want nothing from me. They just wanted me there. And I thought, how can they want me there with all I've done? You know, I was 26 years old. How could you possibly want me? And I remember I walked out of that hospital room, and probably for the first time in my life, I said the most righteous prayer I'd ever said. I got down on my knees, and I prayed to God that those two women never see me again so I could not ruin their life. And I meant it when I said it. I truly meant that I prayed they would never, ever see me again because I knew what I was. I knew what I was going to do to them. I couldn't stop it. You know, I was running around, and in a close family like I had, people talk. You know, my dad's at church, and they're, your boy's doing this, and your boy's doing that, and he's hanging his head in shame. My mom's at work, your boy's doing this, your boy's doing that, and she's ashamed. My sister was going to school, and, you know, they'd come up and tell my sister all the way over at UGA, you know, your brother's an alcoholic, your brother's a dope addict. And she was just embarrassed. She wanted nothing to do with me. I mean, I would pull up in the yard at my parents' house, and they would lock their doors and not let me in. And this was my mom and dad. They loved me. I know they loved me. They just didn't know what to do with me. They, you know, they tried everything. They thought. We had no alcoholics in our family. They didn't know what AA was. They just didn't know. And they basically said the best thing they could do was give up on me. Now, my mama didn't. Sometimes she'd slip me money when Dad wasn't around. She's codependent as hell, as you can tell. It's kind of funny how that works. And by the time I turned 30 years old, I'm doing the amount of stuff. I am drinking everything I can find. I'm snorting whatever. Anything I can find, I'll do it. It's just what I wanted to do. And I had tried to get sober a few times. It didn't really work. But I remember, you know, where I was at the time, small town, you know, if you, you know, still, you know, had the 11 o'clock curfew, if you wanted liquor, you had to make a decision. Do I want to sit here and suffer? Do I want to run down to Atlanta and get what I need, or do I want to run to the liquor store? You make the decision, you go to the liquor store, and you walk in there, and the people look at you in disgust because they know your mom, they know your daddy, they know what you're doing. And you think, you look at them, you're like, to hell with you, to heck with you, but you don't say nothing because I wanted that liquor worse. Because I tell you, folks, I can be down. I can be as low as I can go and just reaching for that bottle. There's nothing better knowing the good times are coming again. And I do this over and over and over to the point that there's no hope for me anymore, I think. Told you I tried to get sober. So I decided, you know, my mom agreed to, you know, she'd pay for me to go to a psychiatrist, a doctor I thought could help me. And I remember he gave me these antipsychotic pills that will knock you out. Because I'm seeing things and hearing things, and y'all know the things. You know, people parachuting out of planes, ain't no planes, and man over there in the woods with a gun, so I got my gun to go find a man in the woods with a gun. There ain't no man. So I'm doing, you know, that kind of stuff's going on. So he gives me these antipsychotic pills that will knock you slap out, but not if you mix them with cocaine and vodka. They don't. They screw you up. So now it's to the point that my health is failing so bad that on June 12th, pulling down the driveway, I see my father coming down the road. I don't want to see him. I'm already gone. He parks his truck and he jumps out with a shotgun, 12-gauge, loads it. I thought, oh, God, he's going to shoot me. He cocks it. He puts it under his chin. I said, what are you doing? He said, watching you kill yourself, boy, is killing me. And I want you to see what it's like to die. Now, this was a minister. I can't imagine the pressure I'd put this man under to do something like this. I can't imagine. He's tried everything he can. And the last suicide, murder, suicide, I don't know. I don't know. That's all he. That was the last thing he could think of to do. And if that don't tell you that I qualify as an alcoholic, then I don't know what will. Because that's what I drove my father to. A man like he was, of his stature in the community, I'd pushed him to that point. So I agreed to go into a detox center. Now, that was the longest drive I've ever been on in my life. But unfortunately, I was in the military, so I come up with a plan. I decided if I'm just a mean son of a gun, nobody will like me, they'll throw me out. They didn't nobody like me because I talked to them like they were dogs, every single one of them. I'd been there about 24 hours. I was still detoxing. This guy come in. I don't know where he come from. I didn't ask, but he asked me if I'd give him 20 minutes of his personal time. And I agreed to. Don't know why I agreed to, but I did, probably because he's a big old guy. And he read me something out of the Bible. I don't know what the hell he read. I didn't care. I didn't really want to listen. But he drug me down there and he said, I want you to admit to somebody that you're a drunk. You're a sorry son of a gun and you can't do nothing about it. And I did it. Now, I wasn't overcome with no white light experience like some of y'all. I wasn't overcome with no stars and bars or none of that crap. All I had was willingness, I thought. So the guy that was at the hospital, at the detox center there, I told him what I wanted. And he told me, he said, there's only one way out for people in your case. He said, and that's the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I told you, I'd done been to AA. AA don't work for me. So that ain't going to work. So, guess what? I got out. I agreed I'd go to AA again. I didn't go. Instead, I come back and got worse. Because my willingness, that's all it was. But it wasn't real. I did not have that vital, spiritual experience, anything that I needed, because I couldn't be honest. I was, when I said I was willing, I honestly thought I was. But when you're not an honest person, you're not very willing. You just say whatever you got to do to get to the next situation. And that's exactly what I did that day. So I can't go back to doing what I'm doing. And I told you about the seeds I'd brought back. They were still growing. So me and a buddy, we come up with a plan. We took a car and we decked it out with everything you can think of to make it look like it was officially government. And this is how we was going to run our stuff. It worked for a while. But when you're like me and you're an overachiever, you're going to take it to the next level, aren't you? And that's what I did. I took it to the next level. Now, I could play the part because I got a PhD and a doctorate in bullcrap. I can lie with the best of them. And I can make you think I'm telling the truth sometimes. But the problem is my lies get so extravagant, nobody believes them anymore. And that's basically what had happened. I even had my family convinced that I worked for the damn government. They believed me. When I got locked up over it, it's funny when you got to call your daddy again and say, Daddy, I've been arrested. What for? Impersonating. Impersonating what? What do you think? I told him, he said, you've been doing that for a year. Yeah, I sure have. Damn, he wasn't happy again. If he could have got that gun that time, I don't think we'd have been able to stop him. So I spent a little time in jail, and I got out. What'd I do? I run as far as I could go. I didn't make it very far because I didn't have a lot of money. And the funny thing is, you know, you're riding down the interstate when you're running, you're thinking, I'm a badass. Look how cool I am. The only $40 I got is what I stole from my baby brother. But I think I'm cool. I don't get that to this day. I'll never get that. They talked me into coming back. My mom called a guy. What do we do? He said, well, you got to get him back first. You know, And the guy's very smart. He's got 32 years sober. He knew about it. He's a very prominent man in the community of recovery. The only reason I came back is because I ran out of damn money. I was hiding out at a casino, and, you know, even the people at the casino get tired of you after a while. So I came back. When I came back, all those things I'd been doing, they had caught up with me. Yep. So my parents tricked me. They said, listen, we got to take you back to jail. But you get to bond out tonight. I said, okay. So I go into jail, and that was a trick. As soon as they get me behind them guards, that guy said, Mom and Daddy left. What? Well, they're bonding me out. No, you're going to be here for quite a while. I had to bounce around for a while. Everything had caught up with me. You know, the worst part, sitting there, you know, it wasn't that I was locked up. You know, it wasn't that I was detoxing again. It was that it was over. I had no more cons. I had no more bull crap to pull. And that's what I was upset about. I wasn't upset about what I'd done. I was upset that I couldn't do it no more. That's what upset me. And that's about as sick as I think I could have got. I wasn't worried about being in jail. I didn't want to be there. But I was trying to figure out, God, when I do get out of here, what am I going to do? How am I going to convince everybody this con again, this lie, this bullcrap that I'm doing? When I was making, you know, good money working, when I actually was a contractor, you know, it was all false. Now, I remember I bought a nice motorcycle, was trying to pretend like I was a motorcycle racer. I'd show up and look the part. You know, you pull up, you look good in that nice big truck and trailer and brand new motorcycle. You look good. They'll park you right up front, right there where everybody else is at. Next time, they'll put you a little further back. Next time, a little further back. And I look back after a few weeks, and I realize they just placed me back over there with the drunks and the crap pits, because that's what I was. I didn't get that. I knew what they were doing, but I didn't care. You'd look at them in disgust, like, heck with you, I'll go somewhere else and ride. And you do that over and over. Because that's that con. When people figure it out, you're not going to admit it. I wasn't going to. I was going to do it again. And I would find people that would believe it every single time. That's what I would do. Make sure I had enough time still going. I ain't even got started yet. No, I'm just kidding. And, you know, so this time I finally get out, but I didn't get out the way I wanted to get out. They asked me, are you willing to do whatever it takes this time? I didn't have much choice, so I agreed to go to a treatment center. And I had prayed in jail that God would give me the help I needed. He gave me help. It's not the help I thought I wanted, but it was the help I got. And it was the help that got me sober. It wasn't easy. It was a struggle. Every day's a struggle. Remember, first went back to an AA meeting then. I remember I was telling her, I said, this AA crap don't work. I've tried AA. It's not going to work for me. And I remember sitting in those meetings day in and day out. And the one thing that would drive me nuts, and to this day it still does, I kept hearing, you're going to be powerless. You're powerless over alcohol the rest of your life. And I got to thinking, well, if powerlessness is all you got to offer, why the hell do I want it? It's not what the big book tells us. Lack of power was our problem. Exactly what the big book said. I'm going to read you something to back that up real quick. It says, Henry Ford once made a wise remark to the effect that experience is the thing of supreme value in life. Showing others who suffer how we were given help is the very thing which makes life seem so worthwhile to us now. Cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have. The key to life and happiness for others, with it you can avert death and misery. In God's hands, the dumb stuff that I did can help avert death and misery. Sponsor told me that ain't powerlessness. That's some power, baby doll, and that's what that is. You have it. Everyone in here, if you use it in God's hands, you have that same power. You have the lack of power of alcohol once you put it in your body. As long as you keep it out of your body, you have the power over that first drink, and then you have this kind of power. And to me, that's a lot of power right there. That's a lot of power. You know, you come in these, and I went to a treatment center. There's a lot of young guys there, different ages, some old guys. And lately I've been hearing a lot in here. Not in here. I ain't going to talk about in here. Up there where I'm at. You know, you hear these young guys say, well, at least they didn't go through what I went through. How many of y'all here were young at one time? Everybody. Remember your friends that OD'd and died? Remember the ones that got the DUI and hit a tree and killed themselves? That's these guys we say that about. That's these guys I would say that about when I first come in. If I'd have been half the drunk they were half times, I'd have got sober a long time ago. These guys have been through it. They've done it. I've spent time with them. And every one of them has helped me more than I could ever think of helping them. So next time you say, you tell a young guy, you know, you look at him and say, wish you didn't go through what I went through. Think about that before you say it. Because it'll run them out of the meeting sometimes. And they don't come back. We've all seen it. I'm sure everybody in here has seen that before. You know, so I made it through the treatment center. I did my 12 months and graduated. Because of everything I had done, I had to stay longer. And that's okay. That's just part of it. That was my plan. When I first come in, you know, they told me to find somebody you relate to. Let me tell you about the first person I related to in Alcoholics Anonymous this time. He's a big old guy. He was crazy as hell. And that's who they told me to relate to. He was talking about jail and prison and going to hell. And I was like, I love him. That's the guy I want. Because that's what I thought was all cool. I related to the sickest person in that room. Trust me, I didn't keep him as a sponsor long. I got another sponsor. I was taken through the 12 steps then in the 12 and 12. You know, all the meetings I've been to start about the same way as this one did. We read the recovery portion of our program, the 12 steps. And you'll hear it said all the time, if you want what we have. That's what we have, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's it. There's no secret. I used to, beginning think, where's these secret meetings? Where do you give people the real truth? Because this sure as hell can't be it. It's because I didn't work it right. This time I'm going through it with a sponsor, and I'm working the steps again through the big books of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, the 12 and 12, when used rightly, is great. When used wrongly, it can be dangerous, especially for a redneck idiot like I am. So I'm going through them again, and I'm learning things that I never thought I would learn. It's amazing how that works when you actually do the right thing and you try to listen to people. I was beyond amazed what's happened just in a short amount of time. Remember, I told you that when I ran, my mom called a guy. What do we do? How do we get him back? That guy's my sponsor now. I remember I asked him, will you be my sponsor? And he said, yeah. Asked me first what I thought a sponsor should be, and I told him. And I was trying to tell him, I said, let me tell you a little bit about my history. He said, no need, I don't know it. I said, well, you know I was alcoholic, everybody in here. I said, you don't know my history. He said, no, you don't understand. I know your whole story. What you mean? He's like, Mama never told you? I'm like, no, what the heck are you talking about? He was the person she had called. He doesn't know everything. So from right off the bat, that con was gone. He knew right from the start what was going to happen. I didn't, but at least he did, and at least one of us knew. So he's been my sponsor for almost a year now, and it's been incredible. I've learned more in a year from watching him and another guy that's almost as much time, the things they say. You know, and you'll hear things they say, and you listen, you think, whatever, that old man don't know what the heck he's talking about. Then you go home and you think about it, and you're like, wow. He actually knew what he was saying. He knew every word because he lived through it. 28 years, 32 years, 35 years, whatever it is, they've lived through it. Now, one day, I ask for one day at a time, but everybody thinks a little far ahead, and you hope, I can't wait till I get there one day. And that's what we do every single time. And I listen to these guys talking here, and I think, God, I want what they have. And then I have to tell myself, they have the 12 steps, just like I said I have. You know, in working these steps, there's no utopia. I've learned that through my experience. You're going to make mistakes. I've made every single mistake you can make in recovery. But I can tell you, you won't get drunk from making a mistake unless you try to defend the mistake, and then perhaps you will. You know, I wish I could sit here and talk forever. I could tell you all the different little things that happen. But I'm not going to, because most of you already know it. But I will tell you another thing that I heard. This little story, my grandmother used to tell me stories all the time, and I think this one, as much as anything, can relate to recovery. You know, it was about a shepherd boy named David. Most of y'all probably know the story. You know, his two brothers were in the army. Dad tells him, he said, I ain't heard from your brothers in a while. Won't you get some bread, get some cheese, run down there and check on these boys, see what the hell's going on. So David runs down there. They're all hid in a hole. He said, what you boys doing? There's this guy up on the hill. He's talking trash about God and all that. And He says, y'all get out of that hole. Go fight that guy. He said, shut up and get down here in the hole, David. Be quiet. He says, I'll go fight him. King of the army says, you know, who said that? He said, I said it. I said, well, shepherd boy said that? He said, yeah, I'll go fight him. He said, well, here, take my shield. Take my sword. Take my helmet. Shepherd David said, no, I'll go with what I got. Y'all know the story. One rock. That's all it took. If you're sitting in these rooms, you're saying, I want to get more involved. I want to do service work. You know, for the ones that are ready to sponsor, I keep hearing, well, I'm not ready to sponsor. God says, uh-uh. Go with what you got. I got you back. Just like David. Any message is better than no message to someone who's still suffering from alcoholism. I wish when I was first coming in, somebody had been more proactive with me on that. Would have pushed that more to me. And maybe I would have saved myself all the time. Now, what it took to get here, it takes to get here. That's just how it is. So when you're sitting there next time, and you think, I'd like to go over and talk to that new guy sitting over there, but I'm afraid I'll screw up. God will tell you, uh-uh, I got you back. Go with what you got. Carry the messages. That's all it is. That is our full 12 steps. You can't do 1 through 11. You can't do 1 through 4. You know, when I got to 6 and 7, I thought, wait a minute, you want me to turn over my character defects? You know, you mean my armor, my bullcrap lies. You want all that? Yeah, right, whatever, take that. I don't think so. You know, and then you get to step 10, you know, same thing. You know, you admit you were wrong. Nowhere in the 10th step in the 12 and 12 does it say you're sorry. Say you're wrong. You ain't got to be sorry. Ain't that great? Just admit you were wrong. You know you're right. To heck with them. All you have to do is admit you were wrong. 11th step, a little bit different. You know, do that one with a coach. Prayer and meditation, didn't even know what that means to begin with. But the 12th step. Now, there's, you know, everybody has different policies on sponsoring. I respect any one of them. But you can still talk to the newcomer when he comes in the room. You can still extend a hand. You can say, glad you're here. Welcome. Come back again. They told me to keep coming back. It's been a long dang time since anybody told me to come back anywhere. Most people say, don't come back. And I come in here, y'all are telling me to come back. Y'all are stupid. Y'all want me back, but that's okay. I'll come back. And I kept coming back. And it worked. So far. I got today. I think if I do tomorrow what I did today, most likely I'll stay sober. We're not here because of any advancement in mental health. Trust me, I tried that. That didn't work. You know, the sum total of everything that we have in this program is because a stockbroker who was sober 6 months didn't know why he was sober. Spent the last 6 months trying to drag idiots like me home with him. That didn't work. They're laughing at him. He had a decision to make in a bar, sitting in a hotel lobby, and he made the decision to call somebody else and didn't even know it and went and worked with another alcoholic. That's why we're here. I don't think that's a coincidence. You know, AA is yours. It's mine. And it's a gift from God. What are we doing with it? Are we wasting it away or are we carrying it to the next person? So the next time you're sitting there, you know, angle your chair towards the door so you can see the newcomer come in. You know, I always told we miss more 12-step calls right there in the room. Newcomer comes in, he hears all this bull crap, you know, live and let live. He don't know what the heck happened. He runs back out the door thinking, oh, my God, them people are a cult. We've all known it. I thought the same thing. You might have, too. So just remember when you're sitting in that room, somebody may be hurting as bad as you once were. There's somebody in here today that's hurting. You know what? I'm hurting. Every day that I don't get to take a drink, I feel something because I can't numb it. I had something happen this evening before I come here that's probably one of the most painful things I've ever been through. As far as personally and emotionally, I didn't get drunk over it. I don't want to get drunk over it because I have guys around me. I have AA. I can come in here and it's like a plan of God that I was telling my story on the night that something like this happened. And I've got 5 or 6 guys here with me that I look at them, I'll start crying because they don't have a clue what they mean to me. I think they do because hopefully we mean the same thing to each other. Everyone in here, because of y'all, I wish I could sit here and meet every single one of you. If you've been here longer than a year and a half, thank you. You kept AA going for me. And I will do what I can to keep it going for the next person. I pray to God my daughter don't have to come through AA. The verdict's still out. Now, I'm an alcoholic and her mother sure as hell an alcoholic. So most likely she's going to have that alcoholic gene. When I told her that, she didn't like to hear that, her mother. But like I told you, she's unstable and needs medication. another story for another time. We'll get into that one later. You know, she went to Al-Anon, you know, and I told her, you know, when I started talking to her again, she said she was going to Al-Anon, and I was like, you know, the problem with Al-Anon is that y'all wonder why we drink, and we can't figure out why the hell you won't drink. That's my problem. Now, I'm not bashing Al-Anon. I love Al-Anon. I was told if you stay in AA long enough, you're going to end up in Al-Anon because you fall in love with alcoholics and want to help them. So I'm not bashing Al-Anon at all. I'm really not. But with all the things I've had to go through, if I would have just thought and heard that message and picked up this big book, when it's all said and done, I'm going to spend about $25,000 on a damn big book. I think y'all sell them for $9 here, and I'm going to have $25,000 invested in one. That's price to pay. But it took what it took, and I'm here, and I'm sober, and I can go home tonight and do my 10th and 11th step. And when I wake up in the morning, I can know that maybe tonight somebody heard something they ain't heard before. Maybe I'll go home and have to write about me because I'm so stupid. And if you do, I'm glad to improve your spiritual growth. I don't mind doing that if that's what I am to you. But if not, think about it next time you're sitting in a meeting. Think about the person who might be sitting next to you hurting. Ask them if they're okay. Tell them they're welcome. If you got 2 days, guess what? They got 1 day maybe. You got more sobriety time than they do. Your message is better than no message at all. Thanks for having me here.
Nick, thank you, Jarhead, for dropping down and giving us 12. Snapped off 12 for us, didn't he? Tinsley, would you come up and give out the chips?
My name is Tinsley. I'm an alcoholic. And thanks for coming down and speaking. That was a great story. I got a lot out of that. If you'd like to try this way of life, we offer a white chip one day at a time. Free yourself. Anybody want a white chip?
Sleep. It'll never leave if I can.